Hello, everybody. This is Jake Sanzino, host of the Jake and Gino podcast, here with my co-host, the multifamily mentor, the coach, the chef, the father of six, the best-selling author, the G-Daddy, Gino Barbaro. Gino, how's it going?
Jake, I felt like I was speaking to you about 5 minutes ago, man. Days are flying, huh? Holiday season, getting it done, closing deals too, which is everyone's taking off and we're working right now. And it's been an amazing month. It's been an amazing year. Podcast has been great. We've had amazing guests. We have a second timer today because the first time wasn't enough for me because I'm just... takes me a little time to soak in the information, but it's been awesome. How you doing?
I'm doing great. And I'm just going to say this. The holidays are the time to get deals done. For whatever reason, every time it's Thanksgiving or every time it's Christmas, busiest week of my year. And we're getting people's attention. We're going to talk about getting attention today. And it's because some other people are on the sidelines. A lot of folks taking it easy right now. This is the time to hit the gas and get some deals done. And we're executing. So to all the deal makers out there right before Christmas, keep making it happen. Got a very special guest today. Today's guest is a thought leader at the intersection of psychology, technology, and business. He is the author of two best-selling books, including Indistractable, How to Control Your Attention and Choose Your Life. So without further ado, Nir Eyal, welcome back to the show.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
Yeah. In case folks missed the first time you're on, please give us a brief intro into your background and how you became an expert on engagement and habit forming products.
Sure. So I'm what you call a behavioral designer. So I help companies build the kind of products and services that get people hooked to healthy habits. So I work with every conceivable industry from financial services to healthcare to educational products, any product that requires people to come back out of habits. So I help companies build those habits to help people improve their lives. And I used to teach at the Hassell Platt Institute of Design and then at the Graduate School of Business at Stanford, and where I taught a class based on my book, Hooked, How to Build Habit-Forming Products. And then a couple of years ago, I wanted to look at the flip side. I wanted to look at, if Hooked was about how do you build good habits, I wanted to look at the other side about how do we break bad habits, in particular, these habits that we have around distraction. I found I was getting incredibly distracted by all kinds of things in my life, and I wasn't being honest with myself. I wasn't, I would get distracted at work when I said, I'm going to do one thing, and then I would do something else. I would get distracted when I said, I'm going to eat right and exercise, but I didn't, and I wouldn't. I would say I was going to spend quality time with my kids, and yet I was checking my phone for one reason or another when I was with them. And so I got sick of it, and I wanted to really figure out what is it that gets us distracted? Why is it that despite knowing what to do, we don't do it, right? Whether it's making those phone calls, those sales calls, whether it's our mental health, our physical health, our relationships, so many things in life, we know what to do, we just don't do it. And the reason why is not that we don't know what to do. If you don't know what to do, Google it, right? All the answers are out there. The problem is not that we don't have the information. The problem is
exactly,
we don't know how to stop getting in our own way. We keep getting distracted.
Mm-hmm. Let me hold up both books, everybody. Jake, you're talking about a yellow haze in your house. This is the yellow haze right here. I had said Stephen Pressfield's got the rice and beans, how they go well together. These two books are so complimentary, but you got to go out really honestly. Nir is on our show December 9th of 2021. Go listen to that show after you listen to this one because Hooked is amazing. Second one, Indistractable. I love this one just as much, even more, because I was one of those people out there blaming my cell phone for the distractions. It's not the cell phone. Let me read a quote, and we're going to dive into this quote. It's the drive to relieve discomfort is the root cause of our behavior. Everything else is a proximate cause. Now, let that sink in for a second. When I read that, I got really annoyed because I'm like, oh, man, it really is my fault. I mean, it's not the cell phone's fault. It's not the TV. It's not anything else. Can you dive into that, Nir, a little bit?
Sure. First of all, take some pressure off of yourself. It's not your fault, right? You didn't invent the iPhone. You didn't invent Facebook. You didn't invent these technologies. It's not your fault. It is, however, your responsibility.
Yes. Good.
So there's a big difference, right? So, and I think what we have shifted too much into, well, let's get the tech companies to fix it, right? Let's get the politicians to fix it.
There's got to be an app for this, right?
Yeah. Let's wait till somebody else fixes the problem. And frankly, if you hold your breath, you're going to suffocate. So I got sick of waiting, right? Mm-hmm. And frankly, even when I got rid of the technology, I still got distracted, right? I got a flip phone from the 1990s, the kind that you can't use the internet on. I got one of those on Alibaba, and I got a word processor that had no internet connection. I thought, okay, now I'm totally going to be focused. I'm not going to get distracted. And then I would say, oh, you know, my desk needs a little tidying up, or I need to take out the trash real quick, or let me just do this, let me just do that. And I still got distracted. It wasn't the technology. And frankly, this is not a new problem. Plato, the Greek philosopher, talked about this very same problem 2,500 years ago. Mm-hmm. He called it akrasia, the tendency to do things against our better interests. So people have been distracted for at least the past 2,500 years. It can't be because of the technology. The root cause, the real reason we get distracted, is not because of what's, you know, in our hands, what technology we might be using. It's about what's going on in our heads. Mm-hmm. And if you look at the real source of distraction, it turns out that only 10% of the time, studies have found this, that 10% of the time that we get distracted, is it because of what we call an external trigger, one of the pings, dings, and rings in our outside environment. So what's the other 90%? The other 90% of the time we get distracted, it's because of what we call an internal trigger. What is an internal trigger? An internal trigger is an uncomfortable emotional state that we seek to escape. So boredom, stress, anxiety, fearfulness, fatigue, loneliness, these things that we don't want to feel. And the escape from that discomfort is found with distraction. So whether it's too much news, too much booze, too much football, too much Facebook, we're going to find a distraction unless we understand what emotion, what uncomfortable sensation we are trying to escape from.
I got the finger going out over there.
So no, I got it. Like, it's just, it's just, there's got to be a spectrum to this, and literally inflection points, for lack of a better term, were probably the worst. You touched on booze, but these escapes, probably booze, drugs, and then the next level, maybe cell phones. Have you ever created a spectrum or a diagram to show the different levels here of where the suffering comes from and the habits that people are injecting into their lives to fill the void or escape?
Yeah. So there's definitely a line of demarcation between addictions and distractions, right? Mm-hmm. Addictions are persistent.
But it seems like it may be in the same universe, no? Like, because it's...
No, they're yeah. definitely related. They're related in that they're both an escape from an uncomfortable reality, right? Nobody walks down the street, steps on a heroin needle, and boom, becomes an addict. That's not how it works. People have crap going on in their life that they are escaping from, right? Mm-hmm. That fundamentally, whether it's a person who's addicted, there's some kind of discomfort that they're escaping, but it's never just about the drug. It's never just about the substance. There's always
the phone is an addiction to it in its own sense. I mean, you're doing it and it's escaping.
Take it easy now. Take it easy. We're not snorting Snapchat. We're not injecting Instagram. We're not freebasing Facebook here. These are behaviors. There's nothing going through the blood-brain barrier. And I think what happens is we tend to jump to that conclusion. Now, some people really are addicted, right? Some people.
I would say so. I mean, you go around and you see people that are so consumed that they're on their phone. They don't even know the rest of the world is going on, and they're doing it to escape. Well,
right, but that doesn't mean they're addicted. So about 3% of the population is pathologically addicted. It is a disease. Okay, this is not something. Oh, I like it a lot. Yeah. 97% of us are not addicted, we are distracted. But we like to call it an addiction because when there's an addiction, there's a dealer, there's a pusher, there's somebody doing it to me, I can blame, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. But when we call it what it really is, for 97% of us, it's a distraction. But a distraction. Now I got to do something about it. That's no fun. Can't I blame?
I think that's what I was saying. The spectrum, though, because there's got to be certain levels to this, and then there's like a tipping point where you're clinically addicted to the phone or something. But it's interesting. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, there's definitely a spectrum in terms of how different substances release dopamine into the brain, and it's off the chart different, right? When people say, oh, you know, you use your cell phone, it's like doing drugs. No, it's not. You're not. It's not even close. It's orders of magnitude different.
I wasn't referring to that in terms of like the impact or the effect that it's having on you. It's the reaction and the dependency to go back every time you're in a certain like psychological state. That's more of what I was referring to.
So you definitely can habituate. That will happen. So what happens is that when the brain is what we call a cognitive miser. Your brain is lazy. Your brain is looking for whatever provides relief from discomfort as quickly as possible. Right. So whatever it is. So I'm feeling bored. I don't really feel like doing my work right now. I want to do something. I don't want to make those sales calls. I don't want to do that thing that's kind of not fun. Let me go do something else. Let me get some potato chips. Let me scroll Facebook. Let me turn on the news. What's going on ESPN? We'll find something to take our mind off of discomfort. But what people don't realize is they think they're doing it for pleasure, but they're not. They're doing it fundamentally to escape pain. If you ask people fundamentally, why didn't you do what you say you're going to do, right? We all know we should exercise. We all know we should make those sales calls. We all know we should spend quality time with my family. You know, we all know this kind of stuff. We should do this stuff. When you ask people, why don't we do it? I didn't feel like it. Mm-hmm. It's always a feeling. It's fundamentally a feeling. And if you don't know how to control those internal triggers, they control you. They become your master.
Yes. Well, don't you have to become aware, first of all? I mean, that's why we're having the podcast. Absolutely. Now. I want people to become aware. You know, I had an athlete, high-level athlete, actually coaching me a little bit. And he said, how do you feel right now? And what are your feelings? And very few people are ever asked that question. And I was sitting there going, I don't know. I mean, I feel great, but sad, lonely, tired. It's just amazing. We jumped in. I snowplowed you. I should have asked the first question is, and Jake's usually the snowplower, what does indistractable mean? Give us the definition of indistractable.
That is a great question because it's a made up word, right? So if you make up a word, you get to define it any way you want.
I'm always writing this screen grab. It's like, it's always changing the word. I mean, I'm like, no, damn it. It's indistractable. Leave
did
it.
You get the trademark.
That's right. Yeah. So being indistractable doesn't mean you never get distracted. Okay. That's impossible. Everybody gets distracted from time to time. Even I get distracted from time to time. What being indistractable means is that you are the kind of person who strives to do what they say they're going to do. It's that you are as honest with yourself as we are with others, right? That everybody knows you don't want to be a liar, right? One of the worst things you can be called is to be called dishonest or being a liar, right? We would never want to lie to our friends, our family, our loved ones. We would never want to lie to them or be accused of lying. And yet, how many of us lie to ourselves every day, right? We say we're going to work out. We say we're going to make the calls. We say we're going to do this. We say we're going to do that. But we get to the end of our day and we haven't done the things we say we're going to do. So being indistractable means you're the kind of person who strives to do what they say they're going to do. Now, this is super important. I'm not going to tell you what to do, right? It's not up to me or anybody else to tell you what you should do with your time. My goal is to help you live out your values. What are values? Values are attributes of the person you want to become. Values are attributes of the person you want to become. It's something that cannot be taken away from you, okay? So in order to live out your values, you have to turn your values into time, right? People say, oh, what do you value? Oh, I value my health. Health is very important. Oh, what else do you value? Oh, I value my family. I value my friends, my relationships. All those things are super important. Okay, but do you have time in your schedule for those things? Is it something you actively invest in, or is it something you just wish kind of happened?
And proof is in the pudding. Yeah. Are you doing those actions? Or are you just giving us lip service? It's great.
Exactly. That's exactly right. Right. It's about what's important to you. Now, if you say to yourself, look, all I want to do is work. Okay. My values are about making money this time in my life. That's all I want to do. Great. I'm not going to tell you those shouldn't be your values. That's up for you to decide. What I want to help you do is whatever are your values, I want you to help. I want to help you live out those values so you can become the person you know you can become.
And Nir, to add to that, if anybody's struggling with what their values are, Stephen Covey talks about it. Start with the end in mind. You know, when you're sitting at your funeral and you're there, what do you want to see at your funeral? I want to see my family there. I want to see the Jake and Gino community there. I want to see people being happy. I want to see people impacted by my life. I want to see the growth and the contribution around me. My wife's taken care of. All of those things that I want to see. Reverse engineer that. And what values do I need to live starting today to get to that picture down the road? There's a lot of work that you need to do on yourself. And Nir's not here to tell you what your values are. I'm not here to tell you what your values are. You need to work on them yourselves. And we call it values-based decision-making. That's how you make decisions based upon your values. I want to be here in 30 years. So what do I need to do? I'm a runner. I've been running for the last 3 months. I'm going to continue to do that. Do I like it? Not really, but I like how it makes me feel. And I know that it's going to prolong my life and make me feel better. So I'm not going to be indistractable. I'm going to be indistractable and I'm going to do it. Does that make sense, Nir?
Awesome. I love that. And I love how you use some of the terminology. You called yourself a runner,
yes,
which is part of in the book. Own I talk
it,
about.
Nino. Yeah. Hey.
What's that?
I said, own it. That's right.
Yeah.
He's owning it.
It's actually, it's a super important technique because this actually comes out of the psychology of religion. There's a whole literature around why when people who believe a certain religion call themselves by a moniker, how that psychologically helps them stay in line with what the religion professes, right? Mm-hmm. So it's almost like, think about like a vegetarian, okay? A vegetarian doesn't wake up in the morning and says, should I have a bacon sandwich for breakfast? No, a vegetarian doesn't eat meat. It is who they are. So when you call yourself by a certain moniker, behavior change requires identity change.
Yep.
So even if you're not running marathons, it doesn't matter. You can call yourself a runner. If you go out and you run for 30 seconds, hey, you're a runner. If you strive to do what you say you're going to do, you are indistractable. That's why the book is titled what it is. Indistractable is meant to sound like indestructible. It's meant to sound like a superpower. And anyone listening to the sound of my voice right now, if you want to be as honest with yourself as you are with others, call yourself indistractable. It is who you are.
There are so many nuggets in this book. Seriously, I'm not here to pitch the book, but you should go buy it. This next quote, I've used it with my students over the last few weeks, and I always grasped as to identity. But everyone, I want you to write this down and really meditate upon it for the next couple of days. I'm being completely honest here. Our perception of who we are changes what we do. And that to me was profound, because when Jake and Gino were the pizza guy and the drug rep, what did we do? We had the W-2 jobs. But when Jake and Gino said, hey, we're multifamily investors and we're going to write a book and we're going to start a podcast, all of a sudden our perception of ourselves changed and we started doing what multifamily investors do, which is work on the right deals, talk to brokers. I want to become an opera singer too, everybody. What do? I go to choir practice. I practice with my kids. I am a singer. And it's the same thing with being a runner. My perception of myself changed. And this is what I want my community, the Jake and Gino community, to do, is start adopting that mindset of even taking it one step further. We create multifamily entrepreneurs. Become an entrepreneur through investing in real estate and multifamily real estate. If you can change that perception of yourself, all of a sudden, what Nir's been talking about will make it a lot easier and you'll become less distracted because you'll be doing the things that you need to do. So let me say that again, and I want everyone to write this down. Our perception of who we are changes what we do. You want to add anything to that, Nir, please?
You know, yeah, it's such a great point. And it goes both ways. We can use it as a positive identity, right? Mm-hmm. When we call ourselves entrepreneurs, when we call ourselves devoted dads, when we call ourselves runners, indistractable, whatever it is that's important to you, to have that moniker is incredibly helpful. We also want to be very careful about what we tell ourselves that might be negative, yes, right? Henry Ford famously said, whether you believe you can or you cannot, you are right.
Mm-hmm.
And so many times people have these self-limiting beliefs that they plop on themselves that do nothing but hold them back. I'm not good at time management. I have a short attention span. I have an addictive personality. I'm a Sagittarius, whatever the hell people tell
that
themselves.
That drives me insane when I hear it. Like my father-in-law last night, he told me that I have to sleep with the window open. I have to have the fresh air. I can't do it. I said, could you just lower the temperature? They're staying at our house right now. And it's just like, dude, you don't have to do that. You're not like, the air is not physically owning you and the window has to be open and you have to be under 24 blankets. Like, I just, Mike, I love you, but I'm not buying it. So it's just, this stuff drives me nuts. It really does. Like, I have to, like, do you though? Is there some force out in the world that's controlling you and owning you, or you're not in control of yourself? That's
so true. It's an extension of this idea, but so certainly don't have that kind of dialogue. I'm not good at time management, right? If you say you're no good at time management, guess what? You're no good at time management. Right? Like that becomes true because you don't do anything.
You're owning it at that point. Like we talked about, you're owning that. That's who you are. It's the same thing as I am a multifamily entrepreneur. Own it then at that point. Yeah.
Or I'm addicted to technology, right? Mm-hmm. Like, or my kids are addicted to technology. Well, what do parents who say their kids are addicted to technology do when their kids overuse? Nothing, because it's not their fault. Oh, it's the technology doing it to them. So they don't do anything about it.
I have no control. And it's taking a backseat to responsibility. Yeah,
that's right. That's right. You know, one of the things that I talk about in the book is time boxing and how much better this technique is than what most people do, which is use the to-do list, right? The to-do list is one of the worst things you can do for your personal productivity. If you're not turning your values into time, if it's not on your calendar, you're missing the boat. You're already hurting yourself. We can talk about why to-do lists are so ineffective compared to time boxing.
Go ahead, real quick.
So when I talk about this time boxing technique, many people say, oh, I couldn't do that. I couldn't plan out my day. I need time to be spontaneous. I need time to do what I need to do, right? I can't sit down. I can't. As opposed to, how could I, right? There's decades of research saying that this technique is effective, right? Thousands of peer-reviewed studies showing how effective this technique is. And the first thing that people generally, most people adopt it. Some people, the low performers who don't adopt it, they say, well, I can't. And then I say, okay, well, let's test this theory of you can't. What if I said that I'm going to give you $50,000 if you planned your week and followed it to the T? Could you do that? $50,000. Yeah, I could do that. Okay, so we've established you can. Think about that for a minute. We've established you can, right? Now we're just negotiating a price. How important is it to you? Is it $50,000 important to you? How many people could complete a sale, could finish a deal, could do the things they wanted to do and make that $50,000 if they use these techniques that I've been talking about here around time boxing, around mastering your internal triggers, around becoming indistractable? They could make more than the $50,000. But when you couch it that way, now all of a sudden it becomes real. Actually, wait a minute. I think I can do that.
Mm-hmm. I agree. Jake, you want to jump
in? Yeah, I wanted to back up for a second because I think you may be able to add tremendous value to folks' life here if we break down the topic we were just speaking about. So you said, my kids are addicted to technology. I said, my father-in-law, I have to sleep with the window open. When we start saying these things, I believe, and it just hit me, that the reason people say this is because people don't challenge the bullshit. So if someone's saying one of these things, I am this, or I have to do this, people tend to not want to engage back at them and say, yeah, that's kind of bullshit. You are. And so they probably, it's a way to get, you know, I'm off the hook because I say this and I don't have to prove out my thesis, if you will. Can you break that down? Because I think for anyone listening, if you're doing this, I'd love to hear Nir's take on why they are and what the meaning behind it is.
Yeah. So there, without going too deep into the neuroscience.
No, go deep, man. You're smart. Yeah, dude. You want to hear it. Hit it.
So there's this theory in psychology, which is actually pretty cutting edge. It's not a very well-known theory. In the neuroscience community, it's well-known, but it's called predictive processing. That it turns out that the way the brain makes decision, the brain is not a computer. The brain is more of a thermostat. And the way the thermostat works is that it looks at current settings. It looks at what's currently going on, and it takes input in terms of the external environment, and it makes a real-time hallucination. So what you experience as reality is not really real. Like if you're listening to my voice right now, your brain is actually filtering out all kinds of signal, all kinds of data that's coming in that you're not focusing on. And that has to constantly be updated. Now, what is it updating? It's updating what we call priors. Priors are your past understanding, your past information, your memories that are stored, that all your brain has to do is just refresh those past memories, which means that most of what we do is based on what we did. So when we solidify our identity and we say, we are this, I can't this, I must that, that becomes all we can do. Because the brain looks back at that prior and says, that's a safe spot, that's reality, that's what is, let's just stay there. It's only when we push ourselves beyond those priors, when we try and update those priors, like let me give you a great example, phobias, okay? Phobias are when priors become what we call trapped. Okay. Mm-hmm. How do you relieve someone of a phobia? Let's say someone is afraid of dogs, right? And so it's because they had some kind of past trauma with a dog. Maybe the dog bit them and they have a fear from being a child. And even if you expose them to a little puppy, they freak out, right? And it's not by choice. They start sweating. They start shaking. They have really intense anxiety, not by choice, but it's just this automatic reaction because of that prior, right? Because of that memory. Now, what do you do to relieve them of this phobia? You expose them. So first you show them a picture of a dog. Then you show them a movie of a dog. Then you maybe eventually you work up to putting them in proximity to seeing a dog, but it's very far away. Then you put them in a room with a puppy and someone's holding the puppy. Then eventually, if you keep doing this, if you keep exposing them to this, eventually they can, you know, pet a Rottweiler and feel safe, right? But that takes time to expose them to what was initially very uncomfortable. A shortcut to not have to do any of that discomfort is, this is the way I am. Yeah. This is the way I am. I'm stuck. I am scared of dogs.
Yes, I agree with you. With the height and with the claustrophobia and all, I am just claustrophobic. I can't get over that. I agree with you. That is an awesome insight.
So we're calling out the bullshit now. If you're out there listening to it and just to be relevant to what we do, if you're saying, I can't call a broker, they don't, you know, I don't have the whatever. Call out your own bullshit, look in the mirror and be honest with yourself. And if you're doing this stuff, you know, the first step is probably being self-aware, I would say.
And Jake, fair? That's important. Yeah, it's important that you need the accountability too. That's why we created the Jake and Gino community. You want to be surrounded. You want that proximity. But I have a little tip for you, Mr. Stenziano. Frank McKenney, our fellow jabroni, had a great point on our podcast, Multifamily Zone. He said, invite conflict with respect. We're talking about relationships with the spouses. Invite, we don't do that anymore. Let's have a conflict, but let's do it respectfully. You could call out your father-in-law respectfully and say, well, do you really? And start diving into it. Like, those questions, I'm not going to tell you what to say to your father-in-law. That's all you, bro.
I said, could you just turn the here. Be careful. I said, could you just turn the temperature down? And then it started going south. So I started backing up. So.
Well, you don't say, could you say, what if you turn it? You have to ask those empowering questions, not those yes or no questions.
I need the fresh air.
or even better, you know, we know that trying to change others doesn't work. It's very hard to change other people, but leading by example.
Yeah.
Yes.
Right.
Well, how do you survive in the house without the window open all day? Anyway, sorry.
So with parents or bosses, by the way, when it comes to distraction, right? The best thing we can do as parents, if you find your kids are over, you know, I hear this from parents all the time. My kid won't get off Fortnite. They're constantly on Snapchat. What do I do? And as they're asking me this, they're checking email. Right. So the best thing you can do is become indistractable yourself, right? Kids come pre-wired with these hypocrisy detection devices, these little invisible antennae that is scanning to see where you screw up. And so we have to set the example ourselves. The same if you're a boss, right? If you're a manager. I get called into companies all the time. Oh, my employees are always distracted. They're not getting their work done. And I go to these meetings with folks, and it's always the big boss in the back of the room who's so important. They need to check email all the time.
Under the table and everything.
Exactly. Yeah. So it's about setting that good example. That's the best way to help someone become indistractable, is to be indistractable yourself.
Before we get into the four modalities, I want to get into those real quick. How do you start to manage that distraction?
So the first step is understanding what is distraction. Mm-hmm. And this is a really important point, because I think it's a term I thought I understood, right? Everybody knows what distraction is, right? Mm-hmm. Well, if you want to test yourself and ask, do you know what distraction is? Ask yourself what distraction is not. What is the opposite of distraction? Most people would say the opposite of distraction is focus, right? Yes. I don't want to be distracted. I want to be focused, right? No. The opposite of distraction is not focus. The opposite of distraction, if you look at the origin of the word, is traction.
Yes.
That both words come from the same Latin root, trahare, which means to pull. And you'll notice that traction and distraction end in the same six letters, A-C-T-I-O-N, that spells action, reminding us distraction is not something that happens to us. It is an action we take. So traction, by definition, is any action that pulls you towards what you said you were going to do, things that help you live out your values and become the kind of person you want to become. The opposite of traction is distraction. Distraction is any action that pulls you further away from what you said you were going to do, further away from your values, further away from becoming the kind of person you want to become. So the most important first step is to define for yourself what is traction and what is distraction. Distraction is anything that is not what you said you were going to do. And so this is one of the most important rules, is you can't call something a distraction unless you know what it distracted you from. Write this down if you can. You can't call something a distraction unless you know what it distracted you from. So if you've got lots of white open space on your calendar, what did you get distracted from? Everything's a distraction unless you planned what you want to do with your time. Mm-hmm. So that's one of the most important things. Because, well, by the way, where I see this really hurting people's lives and careers is when they think to themselves, oh, if it's a work task, it's fine. That's not a distraction, right? If I'm checking email, if I'm scrolling a Slack channel, if I'm making a phone call, that's work. I got to do that at some point today. If I'm checking off one of those cute little boxes on my to-do list, that's a work-related task, right? Well, no. If you said you were going to do those sales calls and now you're checking email, well, that was a distraction. Because if you said you were going to do one thing and you're doing anything else, that's a distraction. In fact, that's the most dangerous form of distraction, because distraction has tricked you into prioritizing the easy and the urgent work at the expense of the hard and important work you have to do to move your life and your career forward.
There's effort there, Gino. And I'd my favorite quote of all time is, don't confuse effort with results. And that's the thing. People think they're doing something. They're checking, I'm working, I'm doing that. But you really, are you driving the results that need to be driven there? So
Running real fast in the wrong direction.
Yeah.
Well, it's the Stephen Covey again. I have to quote, reference him again, those four quadrants. People do things that are, you know, they're not urgent, but they're really important. Those are the people who are truly successful, because they're the ones who can plan. They're the ones who are always forward thinking. They're ones who are making those broker calls. They're not generating revenue today, but they're doing things for the future. Most of us are doing things that are urgent and things that are on fire, or what Nir said, things that aren't urgent, but they make it seem as if we're doing important stuff. And guys, go back and listen to that, because that's really important, that distraction. I never really thought of it from that perspective. I love that. The four modalities, master internal triggers is number one. Let's dive into that. That's important.
Yeah. So that's what we talked about in terms of those uncomfortable sensations, right? That 90% of our distractions start within our own heads. Mm-hmm. It's not the pings and dings. It's the feelings, right? Mm-hmm. It's boredom, loneliness, fatigue, uncertainty, stress, anxiety. What you do in response to that discomfort is critically important. High performers will take that discomfort and they'll use it like rocket fuel to push them towards traction. Okay. Mm-hmm. It drives them forward. They got something to prove. Whereas low performers, when they feel bored, lonely, stressed, anxious, they look for escape. They look for a distraction. They take a drink. They turn on the TV. They putz around Facebook. They do everything but facing that discomfort and leaning into it and using it like rocket fuel. That's what high performers do. So what we have to do is to have these tools at our disposal. We have to have these arrows in our quiver ready to go so that when we feel discomfort, which all of us feel, right? It doesn't matter how high of a performer you are. You're going to feel anxious, stressed, lonely, bored. You're going to feel that discomfort. The question is, what do you do with it? Do you master it or do you let it master you? So that's step number one. Step number two is to make time for traction, right? This is what we talked about earlier, planning out your day, knowing what you're going to do with every minute of your day. So, oh, that's so rigid. How could I do that? I need to have time, you know, open white space to do what I want. Okay, when you retire, mm-hmm. right? If you're not doing what you said you're going to do, you have got to put those tasks, the things that you want to do with your time and attention on your calendar, including the fun stuff. Right? You want to watch a movie? You want to, you know, play a video game? Great. Do it. I want you to do it, but put it on your calendar. Have that time.
Can I touch on that, Nir?
Yeah.
I just want to touch on that for a second, because from somebody that has lived both sides of that spectrum, it's actually much more comforting to follow the yellow brick road. And every Sunday I spend about an hour, and it's old school, but I literally write down everything I'm supposed to do. I time block it, and you build in time for the things that you want to do that are fun, but having that direction allows my mind to focus on other things. And I'm not wondering what's coming up next or having to plan it. So the calendar leads me and my things get done, and it's a more comfortable way of life for me. So I'm just challenging the folks out there. If you're not doing this now, be open-minded enough to give it a shot for a long enough period of time to see if it sticks and if it works for you. Cause I find it much more enjoyable, and there's less stress in my life and confusion and just more inner peace from it, ultimately.
Amen. Yeah. Amen. And so few people have actually experienced what the serenity of leisure should feel like, right? Because so many people, if they have any kind of, most people don't use any time management technique, right? They're just treading water. Some who do, they use the to-do list, right? But the problem with a to-do list is that there's no constraints. You can always add more and more and more and more and more to the to-do list. So here's what happens. This is what happened to me for years. I call it the tyranny of the to-do list. I would come home from work, be working my butt off. I come home and all I want to do is veg out and, you know, hang out with my kid or, you know, just relax. And yet I can't, because even when I do that stuff, I'm thinking about all the things I still didn't do on my to-do list. Whereas now that's gone, because when I come home, on my calendar is time to play with my kid, time to watch a movie, time to spend with my wife. And that's all I should be doing with my time. I don't have to worry about my to-do list, right? If I do anything but the thing I said I was going to do, even if it's playing video games, if that's what I plan to do, I can honestly, truly enjoy it with my full attention.
And that's
you're doing what you're supposed
aware,
to be doing at that time.
Yes, yeah. Open and aware. Right? I experienced that yesterday, Jake, at 1 o'clock, had lunch. I went in the house. I actually played Barbies with Laura, 7-year-old. And for like 42 minutes, I looked at the clock. I said, at 1:42, I've got to go on. I have a 2 o'clock call. I actually sat there. I was Kenny Boy and she was Elizabeth and Bethany. And it was actually amazing. I rarely do that in the middle of the afternoon because sometimes I'm afraid that I can't get back into work mode. But I think everyone try it out. And I actually had it planned.
Probably become more creative from it.
It was a lot of fun, dude. Well, the funny thing was she actually wanted to move. So we have a little house. She wanted to move out of the little house into the bigger house. So then I get into, hey, Laura, are we going to sell this house or are we going to rent it out? We got to get the moving first and all that. And it just gets into this conversation and it's amazing. Kids are just
did you smack you? Come on, Dad.
It's just like the conversation and she gets so serious. She's like, well, Dad, Kenny Boy has got to help me move the stuff. I need a moving person. So I'm on the phone. You should have seen it. Now I'm being distractible right now. I'm getting off topic, but it's
no, this pure is great. Joy. This is the good stuff, man.
It's the pure joy that Nir talks about. For 45 minutes, I actually didn't think about work at all. I sat there and I was in the moment. That's what we all want to be. We don't want to be distracted from those amazing moments. I'm not getting that moment back. And you know what? Today, I think around 1:30, instead of going to the tailor, I may go play a little Barbies today. I don't know. It made me feel good because we worked till late last night, and it's not just the work involved. It's just having those special moments. And what Nir's talking about is we can plan those special moments. We can create those special moments.
You have to, or they're life's going to pass you by. I think the point, that's the point.
I agree. The third one, is it hack back external triggers?
Right. So the third step, so after we've mastered the internal triggers, made time for traction, the third step is hack back the external triggers. So this is kind of the nuts and bolts. This is the simple stuff. If you just take a few minutes to do it, you know, changing the notification settings on your phone, that's easy stuff, right? That's kindergarten. But what about the stuff that turns out to be super distracting that we do throughout our day that we may not realize is a distraction? You know, how many stupid meetings do we need to attend? How many ridiculous emails that we respond to that didn't need our time and attention? What do we do when our kids, you know, we're just talking about kids and they're fantastic. We love them to death. But what happens if we're working from home and our kids become a distraction? So it turns out that we can go step by step through each and every one of these potential distractions and hack back, that we can do something about these external triggers. Even though it's only 10% of the reason we get distracted, there's a lot we can do to help us put them, those distractions, those external triggers in their place so that they serve us as opposed to us serving them.
And number four is to prevent distraction.
Right. So number four is the last line of defense. This is the firewall against distraction. This is called preventing distraction with pacts. So pacts involve what we call a pre-commitment device. It's when if everything else fails, there's that safeguard. There's that last line of defense that prevents us from going off track. And there's a few kinds of pacts. There's what we call an effort pact, a price pact, and an identity pact. And this is what we do after the other three steps are in place as that firewall against distraction.
Before we go to the short answers, I wrote this quote down and I've been thinking about it as well. Dissatisfaction has pushed our species to deal with discontent. Can you dive into that real quick?
Yeah, sure. So it's kind of a, you know, it really changed my mind around how the brain works when I delved into this research. Because I used to believe that the nature of human motivation was about carrots and sticks. We probably all heard this, right? That motivation, if you want to motivate yourself or somebody else, you've got to offer rewards, right? It's about the pursuit of pleasure and the avoidance of pain. But it turns out that neurologically speaking, that's not true. That everything we do is about the desire to escape discomfort. Everything we do, even the desire to pursue pleasurable states, is itself psychologically destabilizing. Wanting, craving, lusting, all those things, it hurts, right? Like there's a reason we say love hurts, because biologically that is exactly what's happening. So the way the brain drives us to action is through this discomfort. And that's actually a really good thing, that if we had a species of Homo sapiens that was always content, right? That was perfectly blissed out, happy all the time. And that group of our ancestors met another group of Homo sapiens, guess what would have happened? Our ancestors would have killed and eaten them, right? Because you want a species to always want more. We our discontent is what drives us forward. It's what makes us make life-changing medicine and overturn despots and shoot for the moon. It's because we are dissatisfied. The idea here, however, is, as I was mentioning earlier, that high performers learn how to harness that discomfort. They use it like rocket fuel to propel them towards traction, whereas low performers, whenever they feel that discomfort, they look for escape. They use distraction.
Jake, can I comment on that, Gino?
Yeah, go ahead.
I'm probably going to say the same thing, but it's the Stephen Pressfield stuff. If you can identify the discomfort in your life that's work-related and you can lean into it and attack that versus running away, you would be amazed at the results you're going to see in the next 6 to 12 months, because there's so much opportunity on the other side of what we believe to be discomfort. And then the minute we typically start it, we realize it's not that bad. And then we have accomplished something and we have a self-esteem boost after that. There's so much good that comes to just entering in that world that seems dangerous and scary. And then we realize, wow, this is not that bad. And then there's a lot of reward on the other side of that. So I just challenge everyone to... Yeah. You know, lean into it a little bit, because there's positivity on the other side. No,
I will warn you. It's
your mind will fuck with you, right?
Absolutely. Like, because you've been habituated to always think that when I feel a certain way, there's a relief found in a drink. There's relief yeah. found in a cigarette. There's relief found in watching TV. There's relief found in, you know, scrolling social media or whatever you do with your time and attention. You habituate yourself to always turn to a solution. And the brain is looking to minimize the effort to quell that discomfort. Whatever gets me to relief as quickly as possible, whether it's popping a pill, whether it's, you know, turning on the YouTube, whatever, I'm going to do that because that's what I've done before in the past. So your brain will absolutely screw with you. It'll find every reason and rationale to get you to do what it wants, which is save energy, save time by getting you to escape that discomfort in the easiest way possible. That might not be the best way possible.
The only thing I wanted to add to that before we go to the short answers is for those of you out there that feel like me in the beginning of my journey, every time I hit a goal, I didn't feel fulfilled. I'm like, what's next? Mm. What's next? When I went to coaching school, I realized that's okay. I mean, enjoy the moment. You're climbing the mountain, but we're supposed to feel that way. Think what Nir said, we wouldn't be here if we didn't feel dissatisfied. And I just think of it a different way now. I'm just hitting these milestones and these goals in my life and I'm enjoying them, but I know I want more. And it's not just about me. I'm trying to create impact for others. That's the thing that I had that realization that when it was just about me and my goals and my satisfaction, it was okay. But then once I started including others and I started trying to have impact on others and I was continuing to grow and I was continuing to contribute, that the satisfaction didn't really bother me as much anymore. And I still want to contribute every day and I still want to continue to grow. So I'm telling all the listeners, it's okay if you feel that way, because that's what high performers do. Because sometimes we just get lost in the mix. We just want to continue to buy more units and to grow our net worth and to come. It just sometimes gets a little challenging. And just take a step back and know that that's how we were wired to be. And it's okay. Just enjoy the climb, because the climb is not the goal. The goal is the result. Fall in love with that system, with that process that you're going through, and you'll be okay. And just keep pushing on.
Your values might change, by the way. That's totally fine, right? So this mm-hmm. idea of turning your values into time, I don't like these visioning exercises of let's plan our 5-year future. Like mm-hmm. it's too far. Let's talk about next week. Mm-hmm. Or how about just tomorrow? Mm-hmm. How would the person you want to become spend their time, the next precious 24 hours you have on this planet? How would the person you want to become spend that time? How much time would you spend taking care of yourself, reading books, going for a walk, spending time with your family, spending time with clients, whatever the case might be? How would the person you want to become spend their time? And so by doing that day by day, week at a time, don't do it more than a week at a time, you might see that your values do change, and that's mm-hmm. totally fine. The idea here is to not let your life slip away through the daily grind so that when you end up in your deathbed, you say, why didn't I, right? Mm-hmm. I regret not doing X, Y, Z. When you stop and think about your values and turn your values into time, this is how you ensure you live a life that's not full of regret.
What? Turning values into time, everybody. Write that down. That is awesome.
All right, gang, let's take a quick time out to hear from our sponsor.
Are you looking for ways to improve your life?
Here at Jake and Gino, our mission is to empower students through financial education and the vehicle of multifamily investing.
Yes, Jake. We agree that a person with financial intelligence can change the world for the better.
We've created our proprietary 3-step framework, Buy Right, Manage Right, and Finance Right, that we teach to our community. This framework, along with education, our one-on-one mentorship, on-site boot camps, and the amazing community, has propelled our students to massive success.
We've all been there. We've had so many students that have been able to shift their mindset, overcome limiting beliefs, and set a clear path to achieve their goals. Whether you're currently fixing and flipping, wholesaling, or buying single-family rentals, and you know that multifamily investing is the right vehicle for you, I encourage you to visit jakeandgino.com/apply to schedule your complimentary consultation with our team. And I want to let you know, this isn't a high pressure sales call. It's really just a discovery call to get to know each other better and see if we're a good fit for working together. And if for any reason we're not a good fit, our team has tons of resources we will share with you to help you along your journey.
If you're ready to stop spinning your wheels, go to jakeandgino.com/apply and schedule your call now. All right, we're back. We talked about self-awareness a little bit, and I'd like to get any tip from you for folks how they can become more self-aware that they're using their phone as an escape, because it seems to be step one. What is it? And it sounds very like maybe oversimplified, but I think that is going to be a huge thing for people if we can become aware and open enough to realize that this is maybe holding us back. Do you have any tips for that, Nir?
Totally. Yeah. So there's dozens of different things you can do. Let me give you just a few of them. What you want to do is to write down the preceding emotion. So when you catch yourself, right, when it's you find that you said you were going to do one thing and now you're doing something else. You're checking your phone when you said you were going to be with your kids. You're still in bed when you said you were going to go on that workout or whatever the case might be. If you can stop for just a couple seconds, get out a piece of paper and a pen and write down whatever that preceding emotion that you were feeling before you did the thing you didn't want to do, okay? Whether it was stress, anxiety, loneliness, boredom, just write that down. It's incredibly empowering. What you're doing is you're training yourself to start becoming aware of that internal trigger, because for the vast majority of people, they don't realize it's happening, right? By the time they are smoking the cigarette or taking the drink or scrolling Facebook, whatever it might be, it's too late. So what you want to do is just try and back up and realize, you know what? I'm stressed. I'm anxious. I'm bored. I'm lonely. Whatever that is, if you can just write that down, that's a great first step. The next step is when you start catching that sensation, I want you to explore it with curiosity rather than contempt. Mm-hmm. What most people do when they feel that emotional discomfort, they beat themselves up. They think, I shouldn't feel that way. I'm not supposed to. If I was a winner, I wouldn't feel that way. Not the right approach. What you want to do instead is to explore it with curiosity, not contempt, curiosity. So what most people do, they fall into two buckets. We have what we call the blamers and the shamers. The blamers, when they get distracted, they blame things outside themselves. Ah, it's my phone. It's my boss. It's my kids. It's stuff outside me. You can't change that stuff, right? It's futile. The shamers, they take it on the inside, right? Oh, I'm bad at time management. I have an addictive personality. I'm this, I'm that. There must be something broken with my brain. And of course, ironically, the more shame we feel, shame is a very powerful internal trigger. The more shame we feel, the worse we feel, and the more likely we are to seek escape with more distraction. Mm-hmm. So that doesn't work either. So being a blamer doesn't work. Being a shamer doesn't work. What we want to be is a claimer. A claimer claims responsibility, not for how they feel. This is a really important point. You do not control your urges. You do not control your feelings, okay? Once you feel the urge, it's too late. How can you control it? It's like the urge to sneeze. Okay, if you feel the urge to sneeze, you don't control that urge. You already felt the urge to sneeze. It's too late. What you do control is what you will do in response to that urge, hence the term responsibility. So when you feel the urge to sneeze, do you sneeze all over everyone and get them sick? No, you take out a tissue and you cover your face because that's a responsible thing to do. So the same thing goes with our emotions, with these urges. When we feel the urge to go off track, the idea here is to know what we will do in response to that urge. Be a claimer, not a blamer or a shamer.
Jake, this is once again Stephen Covey's. It's the stimulus response. I mean, as humans, we can control that, how we respond. But most of us don't even understand. We're not even aware of it. We're triggered. How could somebody trigger you? You have the ability to control that emotion. If you get stimulated by some way, there's the response. There's a time in between. We can control that. So
trigger thing really freaks me out because you're basically saying I have no control over myself and I'm no longer responsible. And I'm so emotional that it's taking over me. That's scary to just hand it over to something else like that. It's really freaky.
Yes, I love that.
Yeah. Just to be clear, I'm not claiming that.
I realize that, yes, but to just, you know, absolve yourself of all that responsibility for your being in yourself is very, very scary.
Right. Well, what people are doing is they say, when I feel a certain way, you made me feel that way.
Yes, yeah. That's exactly what I'm talking about. Yes.
And what they don't realize is that they're conflating the way they feel with what they will do in response to that feeling. Yeah. The knee-jerk reaction is when I feel bad, you have to feel bad, right? Mm-hmm. If you punch me, I punch you. That's the knee-jerk reaction. But of course, you know, what's that Gandhi quote that an eye for an eye, a tooth for the tooth leaves the world blind and toothless. Mm-hmm. So that's not the mature thing to do. The mature thing to do when we feel hurt is to act in a healthy, mature way that serves us and the people we love, right? Mm-hmm. Not to just hit and fight back or not to escape, but to do whatever serves us best. Mm-hmm. And so that's really what this is about, is to pause when we feel that discomfort and decide for ourselves what would best serve us.
One of the guys on the team is big into like comedians and things. And he said that like some of these top comedians no longer go to college campuses because they'll make a joke and then the kids will start saying, triggered, I'm out. And they just like start disrupting the show completely. So it's like pointless to even fucking go. It's nuts. So I found that very interesting. Anyways, A hack or two for phone management. I know we touched on it a little bit there with Gino. What is the best, you know, tip or two for hacking the phone management if you're struggling with it?
You know, these days they've made it so easy. There's so many tools that come built into the phone. One of my favorite features that everybody should use is called Do Not Disturb While Driving. It's a wonderful feature. Everybody's phone, whether
you're going to save lives right here, Nir.
Here's the thing. I want you to use it while you're driving, of course, but where it's really powerful is when you're not driving. What do I mean by that? A lot of people, particularly, you know, those in the sales profession or customer service, they say to me, but Nir, I can't disconnect. How can I disconnect? What if my client needs me? What if my boss needs me? What if my kids, what if somebody needs me? And it's really, really important. How can I possibly disconnect and work on something without distraction? Well, you use Do Not Disturb While Driving. Here's how it works. When you have that time on your calendar to do your focused work, what I want you to do is you engage this Do Not Disturb While Driving feature. You're not driving, right? But you engage this feature. And if somebody calls or texts you while this feature is engaged, they will receive an automatic reply that says, I can't talk right now, but if this is important, text me with the word urgent. And if they text back the word urgent, then their call or text message will come through. I've been using technique for years. Nobody ever texts me with the word urgent because they know it can wait 20, 30 minutes. I'll get to them. You know. Yeah. And if they're, if your house is on fire, you have to call me right now. Okay, there's still that option. So you can work in peace with that distraction, knowing if there really is an emergency, it'll come through.
That's really cool. Last question. We talked about owning your values. And, you know, Gina was saying that I am a multifamily entrepreneur, or, you know, I live with a growth mindset, whatever the case may be. Any other comments on that and ways we can help the folks own their values to live a more fulfilling life?
Yeah. So you are indistractable, right? Anyone who's listened this far into the episode, certainly call yourself indistractable, which means that sometimes we do weird things. You know, like if you saw, say, someone called themselves a devout Christian and they wore something around their, you know, wore a cross around their neck, is that different? Yeah, it's a little different. Not everybody does that. If someone's a devout Muslim and they wear a hijab, is that different? Yeah, it's a little different. Do they deserve criticism? No, it's different. It's their belief system. I'm indistractable. Yeah, I do some different stuff. I make a schedule and I stick to it. I don't pick up every phone call and answer every text message in 30 seconds. That's not my values. You know why? Because I am indistractable. That is my identity.
You're allowing yourself to be free and in control of your time and not being dictated by the electronic leash.
That's right. And not just the electronic leash. There's all kinds of leashes out there, right? All kinds of
That's very true. It's very fair. Mm-hmm. Yeah. G-Dad, wrap us up here. We're going a little long.
Well, we did it last time in Nir's other podcast. We went through his whole entire story. I've written down a lot of notes, and I want people to take out a pen and paper if you haven't. If you've listened this far, the first one is turn values into time. That one is so important, everybody. I think the second thing is find out what your values are. And your values can change over time, and stick to those values. Nir also said, it's not my fault, but it's my responsibility. That is really empowering to me, because it isn't my fault, but I can do something about it. And that is the most empowering thing that I can think of throughout the day. Jake, there's just a couple. Give me a couple more seconds here.
Your show, man. Take your time here.
Because people need to write these down, because these are, to me, are the life changing. That's why I'm telling you, you got to go buy the book Indistractable. Our perception of who we are changes what we do. If you can live that through that every day and change your perception, your identity of who you want to become through your values, it's really, really powerful. And I guess I'll end with this one. The drive to relieve discomfort is the root cause of our behavior. Everything else is a proximate cause. And I think ultimately, Jake and Nir, we need to become aware of our actions. I think once we become aware, what's the next step? The next step is to start educating yourself. And is what Jake and I like to say, education times action equals results. But you need to get educated, you need to become aware, you need to consume this content, and then all of a sudden you need to start taking actions. Remember, it's not your fault, but it is your responsibility now that you've heard this podcast, and you can become indistractable.
You know, calling them out to own it. Nir, what's the best way for folks to get a hold of you if they want to work with you, find the book, and learn more about yourself?
Sure. Thank you. So my blog is nirandfar.com, but Nir is spelled like my first name. So that's nirandfar.com, nirandfar.com. And if you go to indistractable.com, there's actually an 80-page workbook that we couldn't fit into the final edition of the book, but it's a great first step. It's totally free. It's a great step to get you started on your path to becoming indistractable. Again, completely complimentary. And that's at indistractable.com. It's spelled I-N, the word distract, A-B-L-E, indistractable.com.
Guys, I really appreciate both of you. I may be 5% smarter right now because of the time spent here. And, you know, that's just really, really nice of you both. So, hey, guys, really appreciate it. Have a great rest of the day. And, Nir, thanks so much for coming on.
Thanks, Nir.
Oh, my pleasure. Thank you, guys. This was fun.